Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. With us this evening is Tony Gosley from Bristol, England. Welcome to our program, Tony Gosley.
Hi, George. I've just been a bit busy this evening. I know we were due to hook up about an hour ago. Had some problems because I had to go driving around our city here looking for some diesel for my car.
Oh, you mean, that's right. Y'all are having a supply problem, aren't you? Lorry drivers, right?
Well, let me tell you what's going on in the UK, because it's okay. Not what's been really portrayed in the press. And in fact, I mean, you know, as somebody that worked in the London, Radio London BBC newsroom for several years in the early 1990s for the BBC, and that was the first radio station I got a job. At Marylebone High Street, right, just near Baker Street in central London. And ever since then, I've been a little bit sceptical about what I see and hear, because I know the types of characters that are, you know, making big decisions in our newsroom, the news producers, the editors, etc. And when this story first broke, George, I was actually over in sort of central eastern England, near East Anglia, in the car on a journalistic investigation. And I heard this come over the radio. I think it was Thursday evening. There are five fuel stations in the Midlands of Britain where they're having a few problems with fuel supplies. And my suspicion immediately went up, because that's nothing. There's nothing that should really justify putting that in the national news. There's not really a story. A few petrol stations that have run out of fuel. Well, what happens is people just drive past and on to the next one and everything's fine. It doesn't make any, it's not, and this happens in the normal run of things from time to time. And so I'm sitting there very, very suspicious listening to this, thinking, crikey. And it's just dropped into a BBC bulletin around about 8, 9, 10 p.m. on Thursday evening last week. Then, of course, on Friday, it's dominating the news. And guess what happened on Thursday night? All the fuel prices all went up at the petrol stations, right?
Oh, my gosh.
So what they've done is they've induced panic buying by saying, oh, everyone better watch out. You know, so what that does is it means the people with only half a tank or whatever the next day are going to go and fill up. Now, what that means, of course, is that suddenly you've got a massive draining of all the supplies of the fuel in the petrol stations. And so that panic buying was most definitely induced. And it was I'm sure there's other people around the country that have noticed this too, to see the fuel prices going up between 5 and 10 pence a litre, which is, you know, you're talking about, that is roughly say 5% or something, right, of the actual
okay.
fuel price has gone up overnight.
Okay.
So the fuel companies plus the BBC, who just, you know, deliver any propaganda that they're told. There's no kind of questioning. But I mean, the news companies don't question things like, they don't say things like, well, actually, these fuel companies operate together. They're really pretty much a cartel. They won't tell you things like that. And of course, that's the fact. So then we saw big queues start to appear at the petrol stations. Now, the story is that apparently there's not enough drivers all of a sudden. The end of last week, there's not enough petrol tanker drivers in order to supply the fuel in Britain. And I can tell you, in and around London, it's absolutely chaotic, because I've just come back from London today, and it's very difficult to actually get fuel. Almost every station is empty. They've got the barriers up. And you know the cones across the entranceway, so you can't even drive in to try and get fuel. So this has induced a whole kind of panic, basically. And the other point to make is that the fuel companies are the richest companies in the country, and in fact they're the richest companies in the Western world. If they want to pay their drivers double time, you know, get them to work at the weekend and increase their payment, That is absolutely water off a duck's back to them. No problem whatsoever. Okay? So this, and also 2 weeks ago, I mean, I'm not kidding, 2 weeks ago, we had enough drivers. No problem. Today, apparently, we don't have enough drivers. Now, this is all coinciding with the, guess what? the Labour Party conference. And what does Keir Starmer, the right-wing Labour leader, who was a bit like Kamala Harris, really, he was a public prosecutor for the whole of the UK for many years. He is one of the people that helped put Julian Assange in prison as a public prosecutor. He took all that Assange stuff very seriously. He's also one of the people that protected the biggest paedophile we've ever had in Britain, Jimmy Savile, and stopped the prosecutions of him. So Starmer turns up at the Labour Party conference last weekend and earlier this week with this very statesmanlike approach about, oh, we must have more migrants in order to drive these lorries. Well, I think the whole thing is stage managed, George. I don't think this is real at all. And of course, this is just a continuation of the kinds of travel restrictions that we saw during the COVID lockdowns. You know, so people are having to say, well, I'm not going to go and visit my aunt because I just don't fuel in the car. The other thing they've been saying, which is very simple, is that the fuel is going to be delivered to the motorway service stations, right? So if you run fuel, go to the motorway. Funnily enough, you're talking about 20 pence a litre more at the motorway service stations than you get paying for normally. So the fuel companies are having a laugh with us, basically. They're saying, well, you can have some fuel so long as you're paying 20% more for it. And you're driving extra wherever, however many miles to go and find a free motorway and get your fuel on there, and it's going to cost you more. So that's really what's been going on over the last few days. And I'm happy to answer any questions you've got. But we have Britain and so stuff in international.
All right. You're dropping out on me because I'm moving in my car. I don't know how this is going to come out on the recording.
Well, it should be. I think the recording should be fine, George, because Skype will be recording it up at headquarters.
Right. I got you. Well, you know, how's your vaccine scare going over there? Are people taking that or getting sick from it? Here, we've got a lot of sick people that have taken the vaccine shot.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, yes, you're right. You know, I can tell you through my journalists' union, one of my colleagues, we had a Zoom meeting I'm on something called the New Media Council and the National Union of Journalists, and I have been for, gosh, the last 20 years or so, well, just over 20 years. Right. I've been, you know, a participant in the national policy making bodies for the Journalists Union. And was one of my colleagues from the south coast of England. She was almost in tears in this Zoom meeting we had last week. Her daughter's 14 years old. She's just had the vaccine. Her mum, who was on our meeting, is really upset about it because she didn't want her to have it. And her ex-partner, who's, the father, he put some pressure on her, she's saying, to have this vaccine. And now she's a day after she's had the vaccine. This is last Thursday. The kid is really sick in bed and her whole arm is paralyzed.
Oh, my God.
A 14-year-old child. Now, this is just one anecdotal story, George. You know, there's a tremendous amount of suppression going on. And I and various other journalists in Britain have come together to form this group called Holding the Line. So you can find it at, I think it's holding-the-line.com.
Okay.
Or holdingtheline.org.uk. So we've got about 35-40 journalists, and it's subtitled Journalists Against COVID Censorship. Now, we are very much aware that the way that the profession has been operating is malicious, right? So the way the mass media has been operating has actually been deliberately giving people disinformation, misinforming people on health grounds.
Grossly on that.
So this has meant that, I mean, there's one, I think, core thing at the heart of the reason why we're getting all these problems with the vaccine, and that is that the emergency use authorization a very important document which enabled the British and the Americans and European and other governments around the world to allow a experimental vaccine to be stuck into people. Now, remember, this is not the right thing to do. You can't use experimental treatments on people until they've been proven to be safe. But no, this emergency use authorization document includes a very important line, and it says that you can only use this stuff and only authorize its use if there are no alternative treatments. But of course, there are alternative treatments. Those alternative treatments are, well, there's many, and the FLCCC, the Frontline COVID Care Coalition, and other groups around the world, including the BIRD group, B-I-R-D group, I-Minted group, they have put together, these are doctors that have put together very, very effective protocols for the use of chloroquine, ivermectin and other drugs to treat people as soon as they present with this influenza like COVID, the SARS, COVID-2, and to absolutely almost 90%, 95% of people, this will prevent any kind of escalation of the disease and any kind of likelihood of them going to hospital. And yet those treatments have been absolutely censored by the mass media, because really they've been having pressure put on them by government and the pharmaceutical industry to prevent any knowledge of alternative treatments to the vaccine. Now, this has led to tens, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of deaths around the world, George. And I think it's actually at the heart of the sort of smoking gun of the COVID conspiracy. We know, for example, in France, that chloroquine was taken off the shelves by the French government in mid-January 2020 to prevent any alternative treatments and effective treatments being available, and safe treatments, in order to create this massive new market, a potential $200 billion market for the pharmaceutical industry to roll this vaccine out across the world, double shots every year. This is what they want. And effectively, we've been turned into a herd of human guinea pigs in order to make money for the likes of Bill Gates and his friends.
Right. You know, Alex Jones's father was close to dying. And Dr. Bartlett from West Texas, Dr. Richard Bartlett, Alex got him to prescribe an ivermectin and also this steroid spray. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Saved his father. Yeah, Alex Jones, his father was saved by that steroid. And also ivermectin was used on his dad, too. In 2 or 3 days, he came out of it as well.
Well, that's right. I mean, I've been in touch with a Florida-based immunologist called Dr. Stanley Laham, who's been, I think, absolutely fascinating in explaining to me and my listeners the intricacies, actually in very simple layman's terms, of the way the immune system functions. And he's explained very clearly to me and others, and my listeners, that it's much, much better. In fact, it's almost infinitely better for you to catch COVID and then for your immune system to be dealing with that, because it means that you have almost certainly got immunity of some sort for life, and that there is no possibility or very little possibility. You've got to be careful how I put this. Very little possibility of any new variants making any difference whatsoever, because your body, what it does is it recognizes the whole of the virus and all the various proteins on the virus. So when the virus changes a bit, your body, in its own, your own immune system, recognizes that virus. It says, hey, I see you've changed a little bit, but we know what you are. And then your body comes in and stamps on that, you know, effectively,
right.
Using its T cells and its antibodies, etc. Whereas if you have the these mRNA vaccines, what happens is it's only one part of this virus that it recognizes. So if that part changes, then I'm afraid you're back to square one again. So the body's beautifully designed natural immune system is so much better than having a vaccine. And it's absolutely clear from what Stanley's been saying that the idea of this emergency mRNA vaccine rollout is potentially disastrous, really, an absolute disaster, because what needs to be done is to be working, as I said before, with these treatments to keep people away from hospital. Also, there's a massive influence of the insurance business on hospitals and on doctors, you know, because the doctors are told, well, if you prescribe this, you're insured, if you prescribe that, you're not. And that is the way things should work. Doctors should be able to prescribe whatever they want, which they think is going to cure something. So I think the financial industry has got a lot to answer for, George.
Right. We have a modern what I call the modern medical model that is an allopathic system over here, and it's tied directly to the pharmaceuticals, and it's been indoctrinating our doctors in medical schools for decades. We're suffering from that kind of indoctrination now here in America.
Well, you're right. I mean, I think the context of all of this really is, let's just take a step back from, you know, this crazy fuel situation we've got here in Britain with the oil companies just deciding to have some fun with the public and up their profit margins, with the BBC and the mainstream media just simply going along with it without asking any questions, and also with the power of the vaccines. Now look at these two industries, right? Big pharma and the petrochemical industry. These people are actually good buddies. They go drinking at the same club together, and they also invest. Many of these firms are owned by the same big massive investment funds. We're talking about like BlackRock, Vanguard. These massive. I mean, you know, I think they should really. I mean, there are things called voluntary funds, but these are voluntary funds, really. What they go in is they look at where there's effective competition that's competitive, and basically they just bottom up and close it down. And this is not, you know, this is a cartel activity, the sort of thing that we, you know, that we tried over the centuries in Britain, America, and elsewhere to prevent, but governments these days are so strapped for cash and so weak politically, and the press is so weak, that we're just allowing these enormous corporations to begin to dominate our lives, in fact to make policy. And of course, if you add to those the financial sector and the arms industry, what you've got is really what Eisenhower warned us of, which is the military-industrial complex, the deep state, running the show. And actually, what we're seeing on our television screens, apart from, by the way, Fox News, I think, who've been doing a good job, and particularly Sky Australia, we have something here called Talk Radio, which is on DAB Plus, Digital Radio Plus. But these three networks are all Murdoch networks. And the Times, of course, here in Britain, the Daily Telegraph has been pretty good, and the Daily Mail have been pretty good, but they're just newspapers in Britain. And so we've seen, actually, what I think is the rise of Rupert Murdoch as actually quite an important and useful and influential and decent, and I hate to say that, because I, as a journalist, have spent many years, you know, campaigning against Rupert Murdoch. You know, his attempts to outbid the very broadcasters, etc., and take over broadcasting here, the sacking of thousands of print workers in the 1980s in Britain, everyone in journalism. It was a nightmare. We had great struggle. We had run battles in East London, print books of the newspapers in Wapping, etc., and Murdoch took over the Sun, took over the Times newspaper. But he's done a really good job, I think, with people like Tucker Carlson, with Steve Hilton, Over here with Mike Graham and Julia Hartley Brewer on the radio. These figures are journalists who are now actually in the front line against these kind of military-industrial complex, whatever you want to call it, new world order measures. And I think over the last 18 months, what we've seen is a rollout of a new regime, really. I would call it something. I mean, they call it the Fourth Industrial Revolution, George. I would call it a Fourth Reich. That is to say,
right, exactly, exactly.
Kind of a Bilderberg fueled, if you can call it. Can you call it that? But
yeah.
You see, you look at, if you go to WikiSpooks, which is a terrific website. It's a, you know, it's doing the job for us Brits and Americans in English language, what
right.
Wikipedia should be doing. And it's looking at all these kinds of, you know, geopolitical issues. But they've got a page for Bilderberg 2021. And I think I mentioned this last time I spoke to you a few months ago, George, but they've now found 75 key people involved in rolling out the vaccine program and the lockdowns and all these COVID measures across the Western world who are Bilderbergs from the last 10, 15 years or so. But Bilderberg is supposedly dissolved. It's not meeting anymore. It's not dissolved at all. It succeeded in its 45, 50-year mission to infiltrate the Western governments and policy-making bodies, and it now could just shuffle off into the background because they now have their people in charge. And that's why I think I brought my book out in April this year called The Traitors of Arnhem, and I'm happy to post you a copy, George, if you'd like.
Yes, do that.
Really looking at the deals done between the Nazis and the Allies at the end of the Second World War. So we're talking here about 1944, August 1944, the Red House meeting, and then the tragic Battle of Arnhem, where the British basically deliberately lost the battle and killed many of their British soldiers in order to allow the Nazis extra time to squirrel their wealth away. And you know, that whole business at Arnhem. Plus, you've also got a chap that's he's died now, but he was one of the pro-Brexit people I knew back 3 or 4 years ago, and he showed me some fascinating documentation about his uncle. Now, his uncle had been a captain in the British Army in 1946 at the Nuremberg trials, and he had been escorting Nazi war criminals back and forth to those trials. Anyway, one of them was apparently a Nazi general who his uncle, I think he's, I'm not sure if his name was, anyway, it's Idris Francis was the guy that told me the story. But this is in my book. This Nazi general turned to his guard, who was Idris's uncle in the army, and he said, "You have beaten us now for the..." I'm trying to do the accent a bit, yeah? "You have beaten us now for the second time. But next time, it is we who will win. And you won't know what is happening until it's all over."
Oh, my gosh.
So
well,
that was said to...
That's
in the book, George. That's in the book, George. So I think it's pretty clear to me we're looking at basically a financial and economic empire, which is run by secret groups, secret societies effectively behind the scenes, that is enslaving, in the process right now of enslaving humanity. So they're attempting to do to the world what they succeeded in doing in occupied Nazi Europe between 1941 and 1944. You know, and so the question is, if they succeed in this, who is going to come to the rescue, our rescue? You know, because there is nobody else. And if they're successful in implementing this China-style, anti-Christian, anti-God surveillance state across the West, then there's nobody left to come for us. So we really have to stand up now, George, I think, against this, the reincarnation, if you want, or recrudescence of the Nazi Empire from the Third Reich. But now we're having to deal with a financial and military and media empire, which is not using tanks and guns to kill people, but it's using finance to buy up anything that opposes it. Everything and anything will either be character assassinated, possibly if it's a powerful political or financial person, actually assassinated. And the idea really is to just buy up any opposition, shut it down and take over using finance. And that's really what the Fourth Reich is.
Yeah, we're seeing radio talk show host die from this COVID-19 and other leading patriot and conservatives in America, and we're just concerned about that being possibly part of a purge that's happening under the umbrella of COVID-19. That could be going on.
Yep, I think you're right. I mean, it's difficult to know where they're going with this, but, you know, for me, I'm starting to see here in Britain the unfurling of almost like a theatre show, which people are supposed to believe. Those of us that realise, well, I mean, there obviously we've had some enormous protests here in Britain against the lockdowns, for example. I mean, we're talking about, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. And I think it's made quite a big difference because we know now, I think, that there are many, many people of similar mind. I mean, literally, I was just at a party this evening and, you know, you're coming across some people immediately who are saying, well, this is all a load of rubbish, isn't it? And so you've got a very alienated public. The question is, you know, where are going to be the centres of resistance against this? And amazingly, it seems as if most of the resistance in Britain, political resistance, is coming from within the Conservative Party itself. That is to say, that, you know, some ex-military people and just general right libertarians. The Labour Party is absolutely self-destructed with this Guy Starmer in charge. We really don't have any political opposition to speak of in the UK at all. And so that's why I think we need to be a little bit concerned about, you know, what we see around us and be prepared almost for anything to come down the road now.
Right. We're seeing the same similar dynamics occur in the Democratic Party here. And so we're really concerned about Biden and all that too, you know.
Well, but I mean, he can hardly string two words together, George. What's going on with that guy?
His decisions, his judgment is flawed, and he's actually discrediting the Democratic Party in his actions and his decisions. So I think they want to get rid of him too.
I don't know. I think we've got a similar thing in a way with Boris, because he's actually quite malicious in Britain. He comes across as this kind of affable, jokey character, but at the back of it, you know, what you've got is people like his father, Stanley Johnson, who wrote a book about the virus years ago. I mean, he's a fantasist that likes the idea of viruses wiping out large numbers of people, his father. And then on the other side, you've got Peter Mandelson, Lord Mandelson, who's really the Labour conference during the week in Starmer's big speech. Somebody shouted out in the middle of the Labour conference, "Where's Peter Mandelson?" You know, which was hilarious, right in the middle of Starmer's keynote speech, because everybody in the Labour Party with half a brain cell knows the real leader of the party is Lord Mandelson. And he's been operating, you know, from behind the scenes. So what we've got is this kind of, you know, mockery of democracy. My book, if anyone is interested, right, you can get hold of a copy. You can download it. It's I don't know what, about $20 or so, $22
if you
get hold of it. And I will post you a copy, George. Quite happy to you to do, you know, if you want to have a review, because
give me a URL I can put up on my site, give you some traffic. Okay.
Yeah, that would be lovely. Yeah, and it's the website is bilderberg.org.
That's
my main site for and also the website for my radio show that goes out on the internet now, since I got evicted from the FM airwaves by friend of the mayor of Bristol, the Labour mayor of Bristol, one of his chums, who took over the community radio station, really in order to get people like me out of the way. So that show is at thisweek.org.uk. I mean, for example, I've got a whole load of stuff this week about police corruption. You've had some news about it in the States, George, but we had the most horrendous police criminal of all British history last week convicted for the murder of this woman who he had just finished working at the US Embassy in Grosvenor Square. He was a Royal Diplomatic Protection Officer, Wayne Cousins. After his shift working at the US Embassy, he got into a hire car, saw a pretty woman on the street, jumped out of the hire car, arrested her for breach of COVID regulations, bundled her into the car, handcuffed her, then took her off, raped her, and then tried to burn her body, right?
This is
an armed police officer, and I don't know how much that's been reported in the United States, but it is the most horrific crime I've ever seen a police officer ever in Britain commit. And nobody has resigned. This is the incredible thing, is we've got a government that's not the Home Secretary should resign. The chief metropolitan police, she should resign. And also the guy's immediate boss is a guy called Neil Bassett, who's the head of the anti-terrorism command. And this guy, Wayne Cousins, was sentenced to life in prison last Thursday this morning. So, but nobody has taken the in the British government or in the police has taken any kind of this shows just what a kind of world we're living in now, is that you can get away with anything. Okay, this one guy is going to go to prison, but the people that encouraged and let him do that is basically into S&M sex, and he was very misogynistic. In other words, he just saw women as sex objects, and he was known to do that, and he was nicknamed the rapist. You know, how can you have a police officer that behaves like that? I mean, of course you can't, really, in any kind of civilized society, George.
You're absolutely right. That's terrible. I tell you. But, I certainly did appreciate you getting back with me on this interview.
That's no problem, George. Anyway, just thought I'd update you with some of the activities across the pond.
Very interesting, yes.
The other thing is, I mean, since I last spoke to you, I think NATO has basically fallen apart. There has been no big announcement, but the French have fallen out with the Brits and the Americans, and we the British and the Americans seem to have precipitated this by doing this nuclear submarine deal with the Australians.
Right.
And I mean, obviously, the other thing that indicates that NATO is falling apart is the collapse of Afghanistan, of the whole occupation of Afghanistan. So I wonder what is going on. We're sort of concentrating, aren't we, within the few main, the British. Okay, see, actually, it's the Yakuza countries, isn't it? Yakuza was the original agreement, but now it's the Five Eyes agreement,
right?
Which is Britain, America, Canada, New Zealand, and Australia. Those are the Five Eyes. But don't think it's really Five Eyes. It's not really Five Eyes. It's Six Eyes. I mean, of course, it's actually five. You know, if you're looking at real eyes, it should be 10 eyes, shouldn't it? If you've got two eyes on your head, right?
Right.
Not
exactly.
One.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, Danny. That's cool.
But
man,
it's really Six Eyes, George, because the Israelis are secretly very much a partner in that agreement, right? And no one likes to talk about that, but the Israelis are well in there, and all these intelligence sharing agreements with the Americans, the Brits, the New Zealanders, the Australians, and the Canadians, the Israelis are sharing all that. Of course, they take much more information than they give from Israel, and I'm sure most people
exactly.
in that agreement would like to think that, you know. So we've got to be very much aware of where the Israelis are in the background. They're supposedly not quite as close, but of course they are, and of course they're a nuclear armed state too.
Right. Good points. They're a major influencer, that's for sure, and dominant of power, that's for sure.
All right, George. Anyway, listen, I'm going to have to go now.
Okay.
it's quite light here, but I mean, if your listeners want to catch up with some of my stuff, you'll find it at thisweek.org.uk. That's the journalism and the books, and all sorts of other information about the Bilderbergers. You'll find at bilderberg.org.
Okay, we'll take it. We'll look. I'll put it back up there. We'll get all this up for you. Okay.
All right, okay. George. God bless. The other one
Thank
final
you.
thing. One final
What's
thing
that?
Is this Spartacus letter. I don't know if you've seen that, the Spartacus letter. It's been circulated in the last few days, which is a really good doctor's summary of what COVID-19 is really all about. And I'll send you a copy of that too. But if any of your listeners want to look that up, you know, it's well worth it. It's a great brief summary, which you just read through it and you think, oh, right, got it. This is what's really been going on. So I'll just leave you with that thought, George, and God bless and goodbye.
Thank you, Tony. Okay, bye-bye.